reason. If I wait on the world, it'll slow me down, but only if I let it. I want it all and I want it now, so I'm gonna go and get it. So I have to see you and I do. Ain't got no time to wait on you. When I get to moving, can't drag my feet, so many blessings waiting.
Rocking with Kat Riggins from her Progeny album, that's Walk On. Amethyst Kia on Undercurrents from Wary Plus Strange. We heard Tender Organs. And Randy Wood and Will Clibman with For the Horses from My Heart and Soul. It's Undercurrents, back with Zune in just a minute.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Tuesday, February 11th at 5:30 p.m. This will be a hybrid meeting. It will be held at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify.
Sound was used for centuries as a method of torture. Place someone's head inside of a bell and ring it.
Tune in to KBOO every other Tuesday at 3 a.m. for the Vinyl Pajama Party with your erstwhile host, Brian.
And eventually,
you never know what you will find on your radio / interwebs during the show, but it will be something.
They're going insane. And eventually,
that's the Vinyl Pajama Party, alternating Tuesdays at 3 a.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. While old age can bring freedom, wisdom, and self-acceptance, many of us navigating the years beyond midlife can also experience bouts of second-guessing and regret, of feeling alone or longing for the good old days. Our conversation today offers guidance to show you the way forward through every mood, opportunity, stumbling block that may arise on the journey through the second half of life. Our guest is Dr. Carol Orsborn, author of the new book, Spiritual Aging, Weekly Reflections on Embracing Life. Carol is a best-selling author of 35 books. She has recently launched the Spiritual Aging Study and Support Group at Substack. She founded the Saging Book Club, run in conjunction with the leading organization in the field, Saging International. Carol is a leading voice of the conscious aging and spirituality in aging movements. Over the past decades, she has also blogged about the boomer generation for Huffington Post, BeliefNet.com, and PBS's Next Avenue, among others. She received her Master's of Theological Studies and a Doctorate in History and Critical Theory of Religion from Vanderbilt University, specializing in adult life stage and spiritual development, with postgraduate work in spiritual counseling at the New Seminary in Manhattan. She's an internationally recognized thought leader on the fulfillment of human potential and a perfect guest for the Pathway Show. Hello, Carolyn. Welcome to the show.
Wow, that was a mouthful. Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Well, let's start by asking about your book. And I'm wondering, how old does one have to be to most benefit from this book?
I don't want younger people to read it. You know, in many spiritual and mystical traditions, like the medicine woman people in Native American tribes, and in Kabbalah in the Jewish tradition, you're not allowed to study the inside secrets of life until you're old enough to be responsible to manage them well. And what I mean by that is that I think there are life stages where there are different purposes impingent upon us. And when you're young, as in the Hindu tradition, you become a householder. You have to get educated. You have to, you know, start a family, and you have to try and make positive changes in society and establish yourself and make a living and raise a family. There's certain secrets about the insubstantiality of some of our beliefs and the illusions that we hold and the masks that we carry, that if we see through them too young, we don't first get grounded in society. So this is really, right, for those of you who are already starting to feel disenfranchised or worried about becoming disenfranchised, you have become the last part of the last act of life. And this,
right,
book is for,
mm-hmm,
you.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because, you know, there's an old expression, how can you can't let go of the ego until you've had a hold of it. So there's a phase of life where you're developing this sense of self that might be egocentric, but as you get older, you know, can deal with that. I remember talking to my son when he was a teenager, and he's saying, "Dad, the business is doing really great. Why don't you, why are you driving a Volkswagen? Why don't you get a Mercedes?" And I said, "Hey, son, you're in the first half of life. That's about achievement and accumulating and, yes, establishing an identity, which could include things and fashions and stuff like that. I'm in the second half of life. I'm in the letting go cycle." So I think that kind of very relevant to your book. Now, I want to ask about the format of the book, and I want the audience to understand this is a little bit different. And how would you describe it and how it's designed to be used?
Well, it's a book of weekly reflections, and each week over 2 years has its own reading that you are meant to be reading once a week. And on that day, you devote yourself to that week, to thinking about it, maybe sharing the reading with other people. There's support groups coming together around it. And if you go to spiritualaging.substack.com, we have study guides. And Saging and various other global organizations are pulling people together in Zoom groups, sort of like the women's groups and the men's groups of the 70s and the 80s. There's a new thing happening with the boomers in particular, who are coming into age, and we are trying to reinvent a vision of aging that is not just about letting go and not just about diminishment, but that has a meaning and purpose of its own.
Yeah, well, that's something I really want to get to. But let me first ask, is adapting to change, does it get harder as we age, or does it get easier?
I'd say it's kind of irrelevant, because adapting sounds like you may have more choice than you really have. I'd say that as you age, the changes come faster, and probably faster than you can accommodate them using power, mastery, willpower. The things that we relied upon when we were younger don't necessarily function for us in the same way. And so what happens, however, is if you have a spiritual past, history, practice, or predilection, if you think of yourself as a seeker, aging, if as long as you have permission, you give yourself permission, aging is a quickening of your spiritual process. And
Okay,
that's
but
what's going on right now, this sort of like massive awakening. We're all sort of at the same moment, and I think it started at the last election, this most recent election. A lot of people realized that their life wasn't going to follow the trajectory that they had expected for it, and that there was going to be a culmination that was going to have their the story of their lark of the this the arc of their life be this like happy ending. And I think a lot of us now I've been plummeting since I was 49, because I was only 49 when I had breast cancer. So some of us get the message that we're not in control much younger than others. So now I'm turning 77 next week. So I've had a lot of years of practice now of living over the edge in powerlessness and discovering how not to be a victim and how not to live in dread, but rather how to live in live aging as a spiritual experience.
okay. You describe conscious aging as a convergence of psychology and spirituality. How can growing older be a spiritual experience?
Well, I sort of I got my doctorate in life stage and spiritual development, and it was very psychologically based, the Piagets and the Maslows and the Eric Ericsons and the Kohlbergs. And they all had one thing in common, which they all saw midlife as a peak. And then they kind of either saw whatever happened as after midlife as irrelevant, or a time of decline. And so after I got my doctorate, I was getting older. I had had my breast cancer. Now I was going into my 50s. I started to look back towards the mystics and the saints and the sages, the spiritual sources that I had really gone into in the 60s and 70s, the consciousness movement types. I know we mentioned Ram Dass, that he's been on your show. And I'm sure that many of the people that I turn to have been on your show. And they had a different vision of aging. And so what I've done is merge the psychological and the spiritual. And so I think the best way to describe how aging could be a spiritual experience is perhaps if you'd like some examples of the areas of spirituality that aging contributes to your growth in really profound ways.
Yeah. So what are some examples?
I think the first thing is, and I remember back in the 60s too. I mean, I have spent all of these years, and probably you have too, and most of us have, trying to lessen the grip of ego on ourselves, to be more compassionate, to be less reactive, to outgrow our original root wounds and leave our masks behind and not be so identified with who we are, all that kind of stuff. And I know I've spent many times in many years on cushions at yoga retreats and meditation and journaling and also therapy and those kinds of things. Nothing has made me humbler faster than being my age and looking in the mirror with no makeup on.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. With all the emphasis and the glorification of youth in our culture, and the lack of respect for elders, unlike some other cultures like the Chinese, et cetera. Yeah, no, it's no wonder. And for all those years, we had to rely on our ego defenses, which you point out, the belief that we could control things and beat the odds to succeed. And you point out many of these coping strategies created issues of their own that we then had to address. Can you speak to that for a second?
Well, every mask has its dark side. So, if you were somebody who prided yourself in all the way through midlife as identifying with a big career and making a lot of money and feeling superior to other people and all that kind of thing, you probably had to deal with other people's jealousy and probably was lacking first to a certain degree in the level of empathy. I know many people who have had only success and really only when they started having the hits the older age brought their way personally did they understand what other people are going through. I mean, if you have lots of money and lots of power, you can, you know, if you're always a boss, you don't know you're a jerk. You know, it's like
Right. Everybody
does for you what you tell them to do because they're afraid of you. But when you have no power anymore, when you retire and you decide to take over the local community center is in a volunteer position and you don't have any power anymore, suddenly you realize, oh, wait a minute, maybe I haven't been the nicest person. So on the other hand, you know, every mask has its opposite. So somebody that I know my problem was is that I would say now in retrospect, I was just too loving and too seeking of approval and too trying to get people to like me and trying to fix things for people, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it worked well for me in life for a long time. I did win approval and I did do a lot of things for a lot of people that were grateful. But ultimately, I learned some hard lessons in life that you can't do too much for other people. And I'm thinking about adult children here and spouses and friends. And, you know, the resentment grows. If you overstep the bounds and start trying to fix things for people instead of letting them have their own knocks and letting them have self-respect and their own autonomy, it's going to backfire on you. And
right.
So, you know, what I prided myself in, I couldn't see the water I was swimming in. So old age has a way of exposing the illusions, the masks, and the myths. And again, you accelerate your growth. If you're the kind of person that says, oh my gosh, I see this now, what do I do about it? And the answer is usually, making amends, you know, fix what you can, accept what you can't, and try and love yourself no matter what, you know, through it all.
It's ironic to think that we might need to make amends for trying too hard to fix somebody else or to solve their problems or to or take care of them too much, to too great an extent. That's very ironic to me. But I think it's really true. It's like I had a counselor a long time ago. He'd say, you have to let the other person have their consequences.
Yes.
And that's kind of what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
Now, you say in the book, however old a person might be, however challenging their circumstances, you can still fulfill your life's purpose. Okay. So a lot of times people get retired and they lose their sense of purpose. They lose their sense of the meaning of life, which has been all wrapped up with achievement and caretaking and approval and all of the rewards of being successful in one way or another. So you're talking about fulfill your life's purpose. What do you mean? What, you know, is this a grander vision of the purpose of life?
Sure, I'm sure it is. I say aging is much harder than being old. Aging to me is the dissembling of all of the persona, the life, the career, the identifications you put together all your life and that peaked in midlife. And then it dissembles. You either do it voluntarily or it gets taken away from you piece by piece, unless you hold on to it. In which case, you're not having old age, you're having an extended midlife. But then you're missing out what old age is all about. But those of us who go through that void and that pain in a spiritual way, we end up being old. And old for me is when we say what the purpose of being old is, I see it as the culmination and the epitome of life no matter what. And here's why. I take Carl Jung's definition of what makes, what is the purpose of life. He said the purpose of life is to expand your consciousness. An expansion of consciousness, period, beginning, middle, and end. So, you know, if I'm going through all of that, or if I'm terminal, and or if I've just been fired and I'm really upset, if you have a spiritual perspective and you have the kind of friends and spiritual practice and insight and take the time for reflection, such as my book offers, you can step outside of being a victim of your own falling apart, and you can witness it. There's this part of you that believes in you. And I also believe in God, but other people call it a higher power. I believe that it's all for something, and you have to expand your perspective large enough to feel beloved no matter what. And for me, the people who are having that experience, who are feeling beloved no matter what, are no longer asking the question, what is my meaning? What is purpose? They are experienced being beloved, whatever it is they're doing. And that gives them freedom, the freedom to choose what they're being called to do. And sometimes it's to go out and save the world, and sometimes it's to go out into the garden. So it's not, there's no one right or wrong way to age. And if your listeners and viewers come away with one message, just please don't do it my way. Do it your way. You already know. You just have to clear the blockages away.
Yeah. Well, you're offering a lot of perspective and insight to help people do it their way. And that's what this book, full of its 100 exercises or 100 weekly meditations, if you will, helps people do. I was thinking recently about, well, I tend to be more Buddhist than anything. I don't care about ists and isms, and I was brought up Christian, but or Catholic, actually. But I identify with Buddhism, and Buddhism doesn't require a belief in reincarnation, although the Tibetans almost always have that. And I wrote an article recently how my choosing to believe in reincarnation is helping me with aging, because it gives me a greater sense of hope and a greater sense of meaning. The hope coming from the fact that there is no death, that you just, you're just molting into the next form, whatever it is. And the meaning is that whatever good karma I accumulate, I gain merit. And so my fantasy is that I'm going to gain enough merit by that time that I have a peaceful transition. That's one goal. And the other one is to be able to persuade God to send me somewhere else next time. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in, because this aging question's big for me. I'm in my 70s too, and I went through the 60s and all of that. So, it's fascinating. So let's talk about wisdom. You talk about wisdom in the book, and how would you define wisdom? And is that a goal, or is that just an outcome that naturally occurs?
I'm going to say it's both. Okay. But I think you have to be a certain kind of person to become wise. I think life presents us, especially in crisis and aging, let's tell the truth, is full of moments of crisis and decision. We have a choice when we're presented with challenging situations. And I've seen people go both ways. Many people, when they're presented with a choice, contract. They fortify in old personas, old ways of doing things. They get smaller, they get harder, they get brittle. And I know people like that who have gotten older and are like that. But what I have seen over and over again, and also from the literature I read, is that we also have a choice, and that choice is to expand, to open our hearts, to let our hearts break, to let things in, and to continue to grow and to challenge. And those are the people that become wise, and that we tend to see as fully alive and passionate, the ones that most of us are going to hold as role models as we age. And I think it's important to seek out role models like that. There's wisdom everywhere, and it can be at the clerk at the 5 and 10 store. It doesn't have to be from a book. The people who have the tendency to be seekers and to open their hearts, they get richer and deeper and sweeter and more passionate and sometimes tougher, fiercer. I say, let's grow older, wiser, and fiercer with age. Why not? Let's be forces to be contended with.
Right. Well, I'm all for that. And you're very positive about hope in the book. You write, hope knows what it wants and holds the space open for the possibility of manifestation up to and including miracles. But hope rests on the solid ground of acceptance that whatever happens is what was meant to be, and that you'll be okay regardless. When hope is present, life reveals itself to you rather than makes or breaks you. That's interesting, because I think a lot of people feel kind of hopeless these days. There's a lot of despair. There's a lot of cynicism. Things seem to be falling apart. And hope, I think the people that have hope are the people that have some kind of faith, as opposed to being ruled by fear. And would you agree with that?
Yes, although you can have fear and hope. Who wouldn't be afraid? Who wouldn't be afraid right now? I think the real distinction is between expectation and hope. Expectation believes that you can use your will and your power, that you are deserving, that somehow life is going to manifest according to your wishes. And that inspired us and worked for many of us for much of our lives. Not all of us, you know, all the time, but I think a lot of us have had a lot of success with expectation. Hope is just much more subtle. Hope is you get to ask for what you want. You get to tell the truth about it. But the difference between hope and fantasy is that you have spiritual aging depends on two principles. One is you tell the truth about reality and accept it for what it can't help being, which is, you know, we were talking earlier about humility. It's like the real gift of old age is I'm at 77. I realize on the cusp of 77 that there are things that I was never going to be able to change on my own. I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know that no matter how much money I donated here or there, how much I marched, how many organizations I tried to head up or contribute to, whatever, that I wasn't going to win in the end. I didn't understand that. You know, that's expectation. Hope takes a much broader perspective. So, you know, maybe it's not about our generation at all. Maybe we're part of the fourth turning. I guess you've heard of that phrase. You know, the history goes in cycles, and we're obviously in a breakdown cycle, and things have to, just as hearts can break and then heal, societies can break and then heal. And perhaps we who are spiritual are here to be witnesses for the pivot. You know, maybe we have to hold faith for our children or grandchildren, and it might not happen in our lifetime. And that is deeply upsetting, to be that selfless, to understand, and that humble, to say, wow, you know, I may have to sit here and hold hope for the future and continue to do what I can, not let it stop me in my tracks and go into that contraction we were talking about. So, right. You know, how do you choose to expand in a time like this anyway? And that's really what the book is about. And the fact that there are these spiritual aging study and support groups coming together globally. We're talking about groups of from 3 people to 70 people who are getting together on Zoom or in person and working these readings in order to support each other to continue expanding, not ignoring our times, but, you know, through these times.
Right. Now, you write that now that you are old, you finally come to realize that there's a better question to ask yourself than what is the purpose of life? Getting back to that question, simply this: what would I like to do today? So explain that for us, please.
Oh, man. I mean, just like you said just now, so many people are so upset about everything, you know. There's also a lot of people who are either going into hyperactivity, like into frenzies, without being grounded and knowing really what they ought to be doing, just reacting off of either their current life situation or the world situation, sort of flailing out there, feeling guilty if they rest for 1 minute. There are other people that are putting their head in the sand and you know, just going into fantasy land, trying to transcend everything. And without saying which is right or wrong, I'm going to say that there's a third option, and that is tuning into your heart and asking your heart, what are you being called to do? And it may change from day to day. For me, it certainly does. On some days, I find myself inspired to write letters to whoever I can to express my opinion or to send money to a food bank or something like that. Other days, I really am just called to go sit in an easy chair and read a good book and take a time out. I mean, I think there's a lot of grieving going on right now, and I think we have to be very careful that we take our grieving seriously. We're not going to know how to come out of this period as whole, healthy human beings unless we let ourselves feel our sadness and our helplessness, and to know we're not alone. I'm talking about the world, but I'm also talking about somebody that's facing a terminal diagnosis or the loss of a spouse. So, you know, I wrote this book 2 years ago before I knew what this moment in history was going to be. But old people have always been faced with life and death dilemmas that really force us to rise to the occasion or to succumb into despair. It's your choice.
I think that I'm glad you brought up the topic of grieving, because I think the art of grieving is something that we need to get much better at. And to me, the challenge is, how do I eke out some semblance of happiness in the face of loss, in the face of accelerating degradation of the environment, of society, of the rule of law? And how do I accept that and grieve the loss of some things that are important to me and find happiness to any degree at the same time? That seems like a big challenge.
Oh, yeah. Well, what feeds your soul? That's the answer. That's the same question as, what do you feel like doing today? What feeds your soul?
Right. Well, thank you. Carol, there's so much more we could explore, but we've run out of time here on Pathways today, and I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is carolorsborn.com. It's carolorsborn.com. And I encourage our listeners to go there.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Play, game. Tune in on the first and third Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. for Winner's Bias, a new show exploring the culture around tabletop gaming.